Hour number two, Overdrive and Mail It In Friday. Jim Taddy and Dave Festchuk with you, redefining Mail It In Friday. I was never a Mail It In Friday guy. I was kind of a can't get going Monday guy.
I know the
feeling. I always struggled with Monday.
Yeah, Mondays are tough. Fridays can be difficult too when you got a sunny day out there and you're thinking about the weekend. And
well, at least you have
got
the weekend.
Big plans. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be great, right?
Yeah, Yes Guy headquarters is just overflowing with opportunities.
That's right. And hopefully. You know, hopefully something other than bee stings. Still can't get over that clip of the
premier swallows a bee.
Cannot get over that. That is just that's one of the
I'm just glad he's healthy. That could have been a disaster.
Yeah, seriously. A wild moment.
Absolutely. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Casey Stern talking baseball. Yes Guy, No Guy returns for segment number two at 5:45. Boy, I didn't get the memo on that. They said, can we use it once? And, you know these Overdrive people, they just kill everything. Rod Smith at 6:05. Keegan Mathison, again, baseball at 6:30. And probably, because I know how the grappler operates, is probably yet another Yes Guy, No Guy later on somewhere before
yes.
we say goodbye.
Yes Guy, No Guy after dark is what they call it on Overdrive. And the royalties will be rolling in, Taddy.
They should
be. They
should be. And oddly enough, I did get some paperwork from the trademark office this week regarding Yes Guy and Yes Guy, No Guy. I did cut O-Dog a favor. We'll explain it later on.
Okay.
I don't want to sort of get him excited, but I did do him a favor with the trademark people. So it has nothing to do with my stuff, but he's trying to.
You're dropping the suits? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. No. Does it say stupid up here?
No. The suits remain.
All pending action is still pending. Yes.
The legal action is on.
It's all there. It's still
the war continues.
Just hang on, COVID. It takes a little while, but it's pending. Yes.
Yeah, the courts are backed up. I've heard.
Oh boy. All right. So let's get into the World Junior Hockey Championship. Sweden 6-0 over Austria today. That was the only game. The other game that's going to happen at 6 o'clock Eastern is Slovakia against Latvia. And so far, and I have to like the order that this happened: 5-2 over Latvia for Team Canada. And 11-1 last night over Slovakia. So if that had been reversed, if there was the blowout in the first game, there was a build there, and I like that.
Yeah, you're right. Latvia put up a pretty good fight, right? It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was hardly a gimme game for out of the gate for Canada. Obviously, didn't have the star power that you would have had if Russia would have been involved. And of course, Latvia was the team that rolled in to the tournament field on account of the fact that Russia was barred from competition. But you're right. You're going to have some blowouts in this tournament. I was a little bit surprised Slovakia was as bad as they were, because they gave Czechia a pretty good game. But I guess they were out of gas, clearly. And Canada was rolling. Like Mason McTavish.
They broke them down.
With 4 goals. He looked great. Bedard looked great. A lot of highlight
reel
plays.
Bedard took some hits.
He did. Yeah. Well, the Slovaks, we always know they can throw it around a little bit. But for Mason McTavish, he's a kid I've watched since he was very young, because he played in the same age group as my son. And there's not a game I've ever watched him play where he wasn't by far the best player on the ice at the minor hockey level. And it's nice to see him carrying that on to a much higher level, where he would have 4 goals, 2 assists last night, tying a Canadian World Junior record. Anytime you're tying a record that Mario Lemieux also holds, not a bad night.
No, I just when you see the guy's resume, where he played, the different leagues, NHL, AHL, and all the international stuff, and of course, two stops, Peterborough and Hamilton and Memorial Cup. I mean, when you look at the seasoning that guy got in the course of a hockey season, it's unbelievable. And he delivered. I can't remember what the goal total was, but it's phenomenal. If you add them all up in the games, it's really quite impressive.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad he's here. There's a lot. I've had this talk with a bunch of people around the sport about the guys who didn't show up to this tournament.
You know, right.
And Shane Wright, obviously, is the one on the Canadian roster that you sort of think about. Well, we had Mike Johnson on the other day talking about this very issue, and MJ was saying, in his view, he's probably not going to make the Seattle Kraken this season. He may be going back to junior hockey, which is not a big deal. As Mitch Marner was the 4th overall pick and went back to junior. After the Leafs picked him for a year, right? So nothing wrong with going back for some seasoning. But if you're going to go back to junior, in all likelihood, and who knows, maybe Seattle feels they need him as a marketing tool. Maybe they feel that, forget marketing, he's ready for the NHL. Who knows? That's a decision to be made later, clearly. But if you were going to go back to junior, why wouldn't you play in this tournament? And you heard Dave Cameron, the coach of Canada's team out in Edmonton saying, you know, Mason McTavish had every reason not to play in this tournament. Right?
Sure, yeah.
You know, he's an NHL, you know, he's an NHL property player. He's got camp coming up, and yet there he is out there. I think it says something about you that, you know, about your love of the game, about your motor, about your motivation, and about, let's face it, about your national pride too, which doesn't hurt your standing with Hockey Canada for the long haul, I think.
It's not going to hurt your career.
I love it. I love it that guys want to play, and I'm happy that to see Mason McTavish out there playing awfully well.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Cheryl Pounder from the World Juniors in Edmonton. Cheryl, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. I'm here in the building, freezing my tush off, actually, upstairs. But the media meals have been excellent with some hot soup. So doing well over here and enjoying a lot of hockey.
So Team Canada, with, I'm not going to say two easy wins, but I'm going to call them progressive wins because you saw the build from one game to the next.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what you've seen so far from Team Canada?
Well, certainly, I mean, there's great depth up front. I think we've seen that. You look at their top six, and then all of a sudden you have a look at that third line as well, which was producing, and just the chemistry between Bedard and McTavish. I mean, some sick stuff going on out there. It's been amazing to watch. But certainly anytime you're in a short-term tournament, I think specialty teams, you want to make sure they're crisp. You want to make sure you're keeping it simple early and just trying to build on it, right? So build every game so that by the time you get to the playoffs, you are ready to go, and I think that's what Dave Cameron wants. He wants to know exactly what lines are clicking and hoping that all four are. But certainly, I feel strong about it. You know, a big question mark for me coming in was going to be what the back end looked like without guys like Gooley and, of course, Owen Power. But I feel like guys like Zellweger and Zabrango have really stepped up, and I've been impressed. And so looking forward to the next game against Czechia tomorrow, which I think will certainly be, you know, a more difficult task.
So, Cheryl, we heard Dave Cameron, Jim and I were just talking about how Dave Cameron was saying that a guy like Mason McTavish, who's already been drafted and, you know, is obviously well-established as an elite junior player, he had every reason not to play in this tournament, right? And on top of, you know, on top of just, you know, the reasons that might come into a player's own, you know, selfish reasons for being ready for NHL camp and on down the line, there's that whole dark cloud hovering over this tournament to boot. But what do you make of a kid making a decision to go out there and don that jersey when he really didn't have to, and a lot of people maybe would have been encouraging him not to?
Well, I think, you know, in some ways it just sends a strong message throughout his whole lineup, and it's why he's a leader on this team. You know, I think he's embraced where he's at. He wants to play in this tournament. That's evident. And I think it's transferred to the ice. I think there's a recognition, you know, that he wants to be here. Look what he's gone through this year. I mean, he was at the Olympic Winter Games. He was at the Memorial Cup. And he still elects to come. And so I really believe that that just sends a strong, strong message right through his lineup, which, you know, into Canadians saying this guy really wants to be on the ice. He wants to play. And in fact, we were talking about it on the panel last night during the game that he looks like he's having so much fun. And I mean, of course you're having fun when you're playing with Connor Bedard and you're putting up 6 points in a night. But more than that, just the urgency to his step, you know, outside of the points, what I loved was, you know, his ability to get to the puck first, his separation. When the puck was lost, he tracked back hard and above the puck. So those habits that really sent, you know, show leadership and the reason he's here, he wants to win.
Cheryl, just as an overview, you know, we do the games with Sean Simpson, and in our pre-games and post-games, we're talking about the construction of this team on the radio I'm talking about. And when you look at the names on this team, there's talent there. There's no question about that, but it's not top-heavy, is it? I mean, it's kind of a, I don't want to say working-class team, but it has that sort of look about it, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and I think that's what you need. You need players on a team, like anything. It's not always, you know, having four lines of all elite goal scorers or back-end defenders that are all rushing defensemen who transport the puck. It's a balanced lineup that you have to figure out the puzzle pieces in a short-term tournament. And I think that's what Dave Cameron is looking forward to here. And you're starting to see little combinations that are working well together. But yeah, Jim, I mean, you know, it's so important that everyone knows what they need to do. You know, they know what their strengths are. You know, a guy like Zach Ostachuk is going to be hard on the puck. He's going to lay his body out. He's going to try and, you know, create room for Greg and DeFore if that's who he's playing with. And then you've got your guys like McTavish and Bedard who really found their connection together. I still think that second line, you know, is still looking to find sort of their certain something, you know, and that's where the build comes. You know, I expect them against the Czechs check you tomorrow to find a little bit more of that. And so it's about building, right, throughout that lineup. No, you don't have Owen Power, but now you have a combination on the back of Donovan Zabrango and Olin Zellweger. You know, Zabrango making good defensive decisions. And, of course, as that stay-at-home defender, I love that. Just protect the middle of the ice and deflect to the perimeter. And all of those things. So for me, you know, when you're looking at constructing a team, you want to find a team that has different layers and different looks. And I think that this team has that. And if they can build throughout the tournament, there's good things to come.
So, Cheryl, obviously we talked a little bit about Connor Bedard already and the incredible chemistry he's shown alongside Mason McTavish. We also just went through an NHL draft where a guy in Shane Wright, who was projected for years to be the number one overall pick in the 2022, turned out to be the number four overall pick.
Yep.
Bedard right now projected by a lot of people to be number one. Since we're on overdrive, if you just throwing it out there, your Jerry's percentages that Connor Bedard becomes the number one pick, actually follows the projections through and gets to June of next year as number one, seeing what you're seeing and hearing what you're hearing around the rink in Edmonton.
Dave, I don't see how he's not. And the interesting thing, you know, when we're here and we're in the building and you see the highlight reels and you see the unbelievable plays and you see the finish and you see him drive through the middle of the ice. But what I am amazed at is his hockey sense away from the puck. And so when you're sitting up top and you don't always see that overhead look when you're sitting at home and you're watching on your television, but the way he skates, the way he finds openings, the way he slides off coverage, the way he goes east-west and skates on diagonals to open up lanes for other players, these are things that, you know, just incredible to see that kind of, you know, cerebral play on the ice. And then he has the skill when he has the puck as well. So, you know, I can't see it going any other way than numero uno, to be truthful, for what we're seeing out here. And then, you know, even him taking a hit yesterday to be able to get that puck and move it up to McTavish. I think those are elements within his game as well that we're seeing here that you don't always focus on those. You're often focused on the unbelievable pass or the finish, but man, there are so many other elements and layers to his game that lead me to believe that, hey, you know, he's going to be numero uno.
You know, I just did a flashback of watching him in last night's game, and I'm going to throw this at you. When you watch him play in real time, it's like you're watching an edited pack, isn't it? Because you see the adjustment on each shift. You'll go in one way, and that didn't work, and you see the adjustment, and you go, this is in real time.
Yeah.
Guys, it's unbelievable. I keep a notepad, and, you know, you mark down plays that you kind of might pack together. And honest to God, one piece of paper, and then the first 5 minutes of the game was almost gone. Because just the number of plays that were made, you know, by him and other players on this Canadian squad, and, you know, that sometimes are overshadowed by the brilliance that he does show and display on the ice alongside, of course, McTavish last night. But, yeah, you know, even if you paused him coming through the middle of the ice in the first game, you know, his wide stance, you know, we're so used to seeing, you know, say a Connor McDavid come through with that neutral upper body, and it's so hard for the coverage to read which way he's going. And I often feel like with Bedard, you know, he has that wide stance coming through, and he is so dangerous because his opponents never know when he's going to shoot because he's got that quick release shot. The goaltenders don't know where it's going because they can't take a read on it. And so it just makes him so difficult to stop. And we can't believe it, some of the magic that he's creating out there from up above.
So, Cheryl, what's it like in Edmonton right now? You talked about how the arena's cold. It's probably hot outside, but the soup is hot in the media room to keep you warm. But I mean, obviously, we're so used to this tournament being a holiday season tradition, whether, you know, being held in Europe or held in North America. It's a wintertime thing. You know, how bizarre is it to be at a World Juniors in Edmonton, and what are some of the things that are striking you as you walk around and take in the atmosphere?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, you know, this is my first time working a World Junior Championship. I have been a spectator in the building when Canada has played, and the unbelievable atmosphere that comes at Christmas time. I think it's kind of synonymous with that time of year as well. Summertime, it's a little more difficult. So, yeah, it's an empty barn. We see more seats getting filled as the Canadian games have gone on. So hoping that, you know, there will be more in the building later on. But it's interesting when you go down below and you see the way and the approach that these young men apply to their warm-up, what they're doing. They are so intensely focused on putting the best performance out there on the ice. And so for myself, that's what you always come back to is what these men want, what they're trying to achieve for, you know, their fellow countrymen and women. And so I think that's what's so special about the event. And it's been great to be up above and to be able to watch some of the young prospects and the talent that is out there. It's been exciting from up here and talking with panelists, and I've really been enjoying it.
Okay, so let's get into this. I mean, the state of Hockey Canada has been a topic for a number of months now for obvious reasons. How would you upgrade the state of Hockey Canada right now?
Well, I mean, it's you know, I spoke about it the other day, and it's an emotional subject for me, of course, having played for Canada for a number of years, donning the jersey and playing for fellow Canadians. And sure, there's a cloud. Certainly, there's being a lot of tough questions and tough conversations that are happening. And we can only look forward to actionable change. And that's something that we've talked a lot about. And I think that's, you know, that's what's happening right now is there's a lot of talk about what needs to happen, about the culture, not just in, you know, hockey or sport, but in society, and how we foster an environment that helps with this. And, you know, as a parent, as a coach, you know, what can I do as an individual to help, you know, whether I'm working with kids or the people I talk to or myself, my, you know, our behaviors that affect others. So I think there's a lot of conversation, a lot of good, tough, authentic conversations that are happening about change. And I said the other day, the ugly truth along with the good truth that sport brings.
Cheryl, you know, you had a great segment with James Duthie and Bob McKenzie talking about a lot of these issues the other day on the broadcast. And one of the things that struck me that I took away was just that you actually had a moment where you went down, where you had your jersey, your Hockey Canada jersey framed, and actually contemplated taking it down. Take us through that thought process.
Well, I think it's like anything. When you're emotionally charged on something and you're upset, it's so difficult to process and digest. And at first glance, you kind of walk down and you had a look. And not that I wasn't extremely proud in those moments. And I talk about that being the good truth of what I went through in my journey and what sport gave to me and what playing hockey and representing Canada with alongside those other women, what that was like. And I talked about my daughters and the enjoyment that they've gotten out of sport. They love it. They're friends. And then, you know, the ugly truth. And for me, when I looked at it at first glance, I thought of the ugly truth for a second, and I didn't consider the good truth that I'd been through. And so it took some reflection, you know, in time, you know, in talking and conversations to say, this is staying up. This is staying up in my basement because, you know, I need to be reminded of those ugly truths. I need to be reminded, you know, for my own authenticity and how I behave and act and the people I work with and coach and parenting and everything else. I am not afraid to ask tough questions, but at the same time, you know, there were so many wonderful things that I got out of sport. So many great memories, so many great relationships that have helped shape me. And so, you know, those conversations have been open to my family now. And it was sad and it was hard and it was so difficult, guys, to have those feelings and still have them. I mean, it's conflicted. It's a struggle. But, you know, we need to do things and find ways to have actionable change. And it's not going to happen overnight. I think we're all very aware of that. But we need to take steps to ensure that, you know, culture, not just in sport, but even within our society, of changes.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a couple points there that sort of resonate for everybody. You know, it's a methodical process to go through all the accusations and the things that were done wrong and very methodical to repair it to make sure it never happens again. And in this particular case, as you say, there is a positive lining to some things that happened there that can pull us forward. That doesn't always apply in a lot of things that we're dealing with right now.
No, and I think, you know, it's different for everyone, and we all recognize this is a polarizing, you know, subject. It's so difficult. And, you know, even choosing to come, it was uncomfortable. You know, you have to make those decisions to have such tough conversations around it. But if we want actionable change, we have to look at it all. And for me, you know, my truth is through my own personal experience, but you cannot erase either. You cannot erase the ugly stuff that's going on, because it's what's going to push us forward. We have to deal with it. We have to find ways to eradicate it the best way we know how. Of course, as seamless, as quick as possible. And there has to be action. And when I mean action, I mean, truthful, transparent, and authentic action to make these changes. Because again, it isn't just about our kids. It isn't just about us. It's about everyone. And so I think, you know, it's a big step. But for me, again, I did have good experience as well in sports. So I didn't want to forget them and all those wonderful memories that I'd made, and adversity and teamwork and all of those messages that applied through winning with Canada. And so, you know, that's kind of why I came back to leaving the jersey in my basement up and continuing to coach and work with my young teams and to broadcast.
Cheryl, I think one of the points that was made when the Hockey Canada brass was brought to Parliament Hill on a couple of occasions was that, you know, they were represented by a bunch of men in suits. And, of course, we know Hockey Canada, and you know Hockey Canada to be an organization that's made a lot stronger on the ice by women winning gold medals. You won a couple of them. As an alumnus of the women's national team, I'm wondering, you know, how do you feel about the idea that there is certainly a push from the outside to get more women involved in the upper echelon of that organization? We have yet to see, I know that Andrea Skinner has been named the interim chair of the board, but we have yet to see any real action in terms of, you know, increasing the number of women in, you know, prominent roles. What are you hearing, you know, in your circles about the possibilities of that, and what might that do to the organization?
Well, I think there's always, when you're going to have change, you have to always open up to people and candidates that are suited for those roles, whatever gender they may be. And I've always felt that way, you know, who is going to be, the best person, or who are the people that can help affect this change? And it's when you look at it from the outside, and I'm not hearing too much on the end because I'm just so involved in the game right now, but you always look to having people involved that have a healthy understanding of what they're dealing with, the game, all of that. So for me, it's always about choosing the right person. And if that is a female, then that is a female. If it's a male, it's a male. I think it's important, though, that we start to have the dialogue around who and where and why and all of those tough questions that we have to ask. Because really, in any organization, whether, you know, if it's coaching or if it's in corporate or if it's anywhere, you want the right and the best people for the job available. And so that's the way I've always looked at it, whether it's coaching or anything else. And I highly encourage, I know in the coaching world, I really want more women to get involved in grassroots hockey. I think that's also a big element to getting involved with working at the younger levels and having the confidence to continue on through the levels of coaching in the game and just giving back.
Cheryl, thanks very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
Cheryl Pounder at the World Juniors in Edmonton. Cheryl Pounder joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Yes, Guy, build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. You know what, Guy? It's red tag days. Visit MapleToyota.com.
All right.
Yeah. A little extra there, so maybe they'll slip me a car. Probably not.
You never know.
Probably not.
You doled out one of your trademarks, Yes Guys.
I gave them a Yes Guy. That's got to be worth a set of tires, right?
Something.
Yeah, got to be at least
oil
a set of winter tires.
Maybe?
No, come on.
Oil.
Yes Guy does not stoop for an oil change.
No, you won't. No. You won't go in.
No. Maple Toyota. Thought I'd put another one in there.
There you go.
See. Yeah. Coming up next, going to talk about baseball. Casey Stern will be by it. And we were talking off air about this Hockey Canada stuff. And really, it applies to everything. It's always better to tell the truth.
Yeah, it certainly is. The cover up is worse than the crime, as they say.
Absolutely. So Casey Stern is next. We're talking Major League Baseball. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and TSN 4. Yeah, finally, some good music. Fabulous. Overdrive, Mail It In Friday. Jim Tattygate Fest Check with you. Coming up very shortly, Casey Stern, unfiltered podcast host, former MLB Network radio host. At Casey Stern is the Twitter account. And then we have Yes Guy, No Guy, segment 2, to take us to 6 o'clock. Then we switch TV channels. Go to TSN 2, Rod Smith, Keegan Matheson. And the end of the show, hijinks, planned and unplanned, and then we're out of here, back on the highway. Let's bring in Casey Stern now. We're going to talk some baseball with him. Casey, how are you today, sir?
What's up, guys? How you doing this afternoon, okay?
Everything's good so far, so far. So you have to maintain for us.
Geez, I mean, no pressure.
No, exactly none, because you haven't heard the previous part of the show. It's mailing in Friday here.
It wasn't that great,
we're not
Casey.
Up to much.
The bar is not high.
It can only go up from here. That's fair. Low expectations are good. I can only exceed.
I'm going to describe the first 90 minutes of the show like the Jays' last 2.5 weeks. There's something there, but it's not what you want. You know, it's not quite what you were expecting.
It sounds like my social life.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. But what they've done is they've let everybody back in the race. What's your take on what you've seen from the Jays over the month of August?
It's inconsistency. I mean, really, it's like when one thing is going. It's one of these teams, and we've all seen this. In baseball and over the years, it's like, you know, if the lineup is going, you know, it's really going, like maybe they should have saved some of those 27 runs they put on the Red Sox, right? Some of these other games.
Yes.
And then it's like, or it's going and then you're getting no pitching and then you're getting dominant pitching and then nobody's giving you run support and then you're getting the pitching and the run support, but the bullpen blows it. It's like they can't get the gatekeeper and the keymaster to call Ghostbusters. They can't get these two together right now. It's one of those kind of things. And, you know, here's the good news. The bad is it makes you feel like, this team really not going to do anything this year. And, you know, let's just get into the playoffs. But baseball's a weird game, and the Yankees do not look as good as they did a month or two ago. I mean, the injury to Michael King, the bullpen, Chapman became their sixth inning guy, Gerrit Cole has had issues. They've been suddenly, you know, once again, kind of, you know, homer happy, or you're not getting much out of that lineup. The Astros have had their own issues. Now it's announced, you know, which we kind of figured, now Brantley officially kind of done for the year. So you're getting kind of the, you know, squeaks of the door being open in the postseason. If the team could put it together at the right time, we've seen that before. I mean, I'll give you one example I remember that I've covered that always stands out. 2006, the NL Central, you can go look at it. The Cardinals won the division with 83 games. Everybody else was under 500. They were not a good baseball team. They were underdogs against everybody they faced. And they end up going and winning the World Series and beating the Tigers. You know, you got to have the right things line up and have a way to put it all together for 3 weeks. The Jays have enough talent to do that, but they don't seem to be able to do that right now during the regular season. And now when you look at kind of the other teams, to your point, creeping in, it's like, okay, but we got to get in, boys. And they're not giving you a lot of consistency as a baseball team right now.
Well, one of those other teams that has been a surprise to many, Casey, is a team that just beat the Blue Jays in a couple of games in Baltimore, and that's, of course, the Orioles, a team that sold at the deadline and still keeps on trucking. Are they for real, or are they going to come back to earth between now and the end of the playoff push?
Look, I think, are they for real, like, are they a really good team? No. I mean, you know, they're 5 games over .500, but, you know, the Jays are 10 games. That's who these teams are. I mean, I think the Orioles have, and I'm looking at it now because I knew it was less than 10. They got a +7 run differential, which is basically, when that stat's like that and it matches up with your record, that's, you know, it's like with the Denny Green thing, like, you know, you are who we thought you were.
Right.
That's who the Orioles are. So, you know, are they for real in this race to not disappear? I mean, look, the White Sox are in this race, so... And they've been god-awful, like, all year. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, how bad are these teams that the White Sox are still in it? Which makes you ticked off as a Jays fan, right? Because you should be better than that and separate yourself. But because of all of what I just said, I don't think the Orioles are going to disappear. And the one thing that I thought was going to be a bigger issue for them than it has is that, you know, Trey Mancini, you know, the heartstrings, the story. I mean, look, I don't care what team you root for. Who doesn't like that guy? But the Jorge Lopez thing of, you know, giving up an all-star closer when you're a team that needs to kind of play within the margins so much and win a lot of close games, I thought that would hurt them more than they have. They've got a bunch of young, hard throwers that they've got down there in that bullpen, and they've been able to pull it off. And I think, look, you kind of give Brandon Hyde a lot of credit. I mean, this guy must have a great therapist. I mean, losing 110 games. I mean, you know how bad you have to be that Fangraphs had them before the season as a 0.0 chance to make the playoffs? Which isn't even mathematically possible. Being in it, you can't have a 0.0 chance. They had 0.0 to get into the postseason. That's how remarkable it is what they're doing. they're for real to be in this race, but they shouldn't be anywhere as good as the Jays should be based on their roster.
Casey, when you go back to the trade deadline, did the Jays do what they have, do what they should have done, or did they come up light?
No, they came up light. They didn't do enough. And here's where it's okay if you're in a spot where, let's go back to what you asked me about the Orioles. The Orioles, look, they sold a little bit. You had to. They did the right thing, right? There wasn't enough for them to really implode the team, but they gave away the guys that got pieces when they had to, and you hope that that turns into something. They had to do that. For the Jays, they put themselves, and they being, I think, the ownership for the number one, because that's where when you get Ross and when guys come out there that are in management and they're talking about, hey, you know, we're trying to win it all, and we got to. I go back to, you know, signing Semien and some of the, you know, the first big signings before the last season, and you're sitting there and you're saying to yourself, okay, the Jays are telling you they think they should win, like they're in it to win it. They, you know, right there in that 60 game season, and after that, they took off in that management. I was at winter meetings, and they're, you know, sitting there talking about all the great things they're going to do. Right? You, when you sell that to your fan base, you then sell that to your clubhouse, which means you got to push for me. And you know that we're not good enough. And you know that we could use more help in the bullpen. And you know that, hey, look, we probably could use better in the lineup than, you know, Whit Merrifield, who, oh, thank God that, you know, my gosh, I won't take vaccinations. If I was a Royal fan, I'd have that guy on a bullseye somewhere in my dartboard in a basement. I mean, you know, he won't go travel up for the series. I mean, think about it. If you're a member of a team, like, you know, we're not good enough for you to get the vaccination now, but hey, if you trade me there, I'm willing.
Exactly.
But I don't think the Jays did enough, because to me, guys, and you'd have a better sense of this every day listening to these guys talk, but the management has sold you a story about all the high-level beliefs. They fired a manager when you're in a playoff position. When you do all of that, you're telling me your goals are to win a World Series. That has to match up with then what you do at a deadline. You know, the Yankees may not win the World Series, but when they lost out on Castillo and they were right there, the Mariners got him, boom, they went right to Frankie Montas. You know what? The Jays should have gotten Frankie Montas. You know the Yankees lost on Castillo. You know their pitching is lighter. That's who you got to beat if you're really trying to win a World Series. And you could have killed two birds with one stone, helped yourself, and canceled out. Really, they wouldn't have had anywhere else to go. Rodon wasn't moved. There wasn't another starter. Those kind of things, to me, are the things you really do when you're pushing. The Padres may not – look, they're not going to catch the Dodgers. And in the postseason this year, I don't think they're going to beat the Dodgers or the Mets. But they realize, hey, look, we're not good enough. And they did everything literally they could in that day and in that week to try. The Jays can't sell you that's their ideal and then not do it. I think they came light on their own expectations that they set. And it gets the fans ticked off because, to me – it comes off like you're not transparent. Don't tell me how great we're supposed to be and fire a manager because it's not good enough and then not push that way at the deadline.
I got you. We were talking about that very thing earlier in the show, Casey. But is there a counter argument there? Can you make, even though I know what your argument is in real life, but can you make your sort of your alter ego counter argument if you're Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro that makes sense why you didn't invest more capital into the trade deadline?
Yeah, you know that you're not that good,
right?
And the problem. Tell me I'm wrong, right? I mean, look, the Jays should be better, and I think they've got, you know, plenty of talent. Springer's health is uber important, right, for a run September and October because of what he means and what he could do, and the stage and tone he sets because he's so good. But they're not that great. I mean, look, this right now you've got the Dodgers, you got the Mets. You got the Astros, you got the Yankees, sometimes the Braves, the Phillies lately. And what else you got? Like, you know what I mean? I go back to the White Sox are only 3 games out.
Yeah.
Like, Tony La Russa can't even stay awake. And they're only 3 games out, right? So it's like, if you're asking me, and I'm curious, like, what your thought is, but the way I look at it from the outside, you know, I'm not in the room, being fair, but based on knowing executives over the last 20 years I'm covering the game, they're not going to tell you or me. Now, they may, if you can't be taken to air, but not going to tell you, hey, we're not good enough. You know, they're just not going to do that. But they're in a room, and they got to say, okay, is the juice worth the squeeze, right? If we go out there and push, and we give up these prospects who we can control, when we know we got to pay Bone, we know we got to pay Vlad, we can write all that stuff. When we go and we give these guys, what's the net? A big part of what happened was they realized, we got no chance to beat the Yankees or the Astros this year. We probably have a good enough roster that we're building, and what Manoah and a lot of these kids are doing. And to me, I'm not worried about Bo. who, look, Aaron Judge, after his first great year in his second season, it was, what, Bo's third? I mean, Judge came back, had kind of a terrible year, and Yankee fans, this happens a lot with the cat and mouse game at these 24 years old, right? It's what makes the Sotos and the Trouts in a realm of, like, two people, right? I mean, Albert Pujols, right, for the first 10 years of his career, most guys do struggle at some point, and then they have to, which I think Bo will, adjust again at the plate. But I think they looked at it and said, we can't beat these teams no matter what we do. So let's kind of see if we can get lucky, get healthy, and make a run. You know, we're not going to give up, and let's try and tweak, but it's not worth it. And they're not going to tell that to you or to me, but you tell me, that's the way it reads to me. They're not that good.
Mm. Well, there's nobody disagreeing with you here. Aaron Judge, how do you think that contract plays out?
Oof. Well, for his family.
Extremely well, actually.
I would say, to quote Meet the Parents, strong to mostly strong. I think you're probably looking at the highest AAV that we've seen for a contract, and I would say, including pitchers, the only asterisk to that is Jacob DeGrom is going to opt out, and if he stays healthy, he may net beat Judge in that category, but Judge is going to get, you know, he may want 8 years. I think you're probably looking at 6-7 years at, you know, an AAV in the 40s. Because the thing is, you know, when you've got the Yankees, how many teams have we seen over the years? We've all seen it. That try and rope the Yankees in to create a bidding war. Because when the Yankees are in there, it scares other teams, right? And it raises the price. You have the greatest scenario if you're Aaron Judge and his agent. The Yankees are the bidding war. They need to keep you. Soto not available anymore, right? They don't have a great team right now. He's your franchise torch in your face, and he's your torchbearer. He can't hit 60 and then you lose him. Other teams know that, but they're still clearly going to get in, and all of that is going to net. I think he probably stays with the Yankees. I say probably because here's the caveat to that. Robinson Cano, who was the last time this happened with Brian Cashman and the Yankees, they did not want to lose. They wanted to keep Robinson Cano badly. They offered him $170 million, I think was their last offer. They didn't think anyone would offer more than 200, and then, you know, I remember having conversations. They thought, okay, then we can cut that gap. The Mariners offered 240 and blew them out of the water. Albert Pujols is the one before that, it reminds me of, with the Cardinals. He wasn't leaving. They had offered him 200. That's a lot of money. But he was kind of hanging out there waiting. Guess what? 250 is the offer from Anaheim, right, to pull him in. I think you're going to have a couple of franchises that are going to say, this guy's going to game change our sponsorship, right? Game change at the ballpark, game change playoff tickets, game change what our value of and our net worth of our franchise are, because he brings all of that cachet with him. And I think you're looking at in the 40s in an AAV. I think it'll be the highest average annual value we've ever seen in the history of baseball for a contract.
Casey, appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Anytime, boys. Be well.
Thank you. Casey Stern. At Casey Stern is the Twitter account. And just on the Jays thing, I mean, it's easy to pile on. They haven't played for a couple of days. They lost two in Baltimore and have been inconsistent. I'm just hoping that at the end of the year, we're talking about a great run in September and looking forward to the playoffs, as opposed to it didn't work out and let's talk about the stadium renovations.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, if you're looking for silver linings, if you're looking for an optimistic projection, George Springer resumed hitting today, apparently, according to the guys down at the ballpark. He's going to throw, might do some throwing in the very near future. So there's this idea that, you know, he could be on that IL for the minimum 15 days and be back to action, which, of course, would be really good for a team that just hasn't had that guy in the lineup nearly enough since he joined the Toronto Blue Jays.
So this is what happens when you don't read the fine print. Coming up next, the second edition of Yes Guy, No Guy. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, TSN 4. Boo-boo-boo-boo! Overdrive, TSN 1050, TSN 4. Rod Smith, top of the hour. Keegan Matheson, bottom of the next hour. But right now, time for my favorite game.
Yes Guy, No Guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, drivers and passengers, time now for the second edition. All trademarks have been waived for this. Yes Guy, No Guy on Overdrive. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Been a lot of controversy in the golf world, as we know. You know, especially yesterday with Scottie Scheffler having the audacity to walk past Cameron Smith as he's lining up his putt. I thought that was overblown. I don't know about you guys. Like, it's, oh my goodness, he walked past him as he's lining up his putt.
Like, he walked in his line.
No, he didn't walk in his line. He walked in between Smith and the ball.
Oh. Well, okay, but his line of vision as he's lining up the putt is what I mean.
Yeah,
he didn't step on his line. You're right. But he did walk, like, he was looking at a putt, and he walked between the putt and the guy. You don't do that.
No, and I understand that. And listen, as someone who plays golf, I don't think I'd be too happy if one of my buddies did the same thing. But it's like, I don't know. I thought it was a little bit overblown.
Well, you can't tell me it wasn't intentional.
We talked about this on the show yesterday. I don't know, because like if it was Rory McIlroy or Justin Thomas, I would think that's intentional. But it's not like Scottie Scheffler has been, you know, Mr. PGA throughout all this. So
no.
Scheffler just doesn't strike me as the type to do that intentionally.
Yeah, maybe not.
Anyways, I do have a yes guy, no guy here.
Thank you.
Yes guy, no guy. LIV Golf will still be here 10 years from now.
Oh, I'm going to say yes guy. There's a lot of money that when we talked about startup leagues going back a number of decades to hockey, basketball, and football, they didn't have the Brinks trucks lined up like these guys do. So I'm going to say yes. Yes, guy.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no, guy. It will not be around for 10. But I think 5 to 6, yes. 7, 8, 9, 10 is going to get dicey. Because I do think
what do you think happens? Like, what is the end of all this?
Well, the end game, I think they're looking to, you know, form some kind of a partnership and become part of the global golf scene. I just don't think the global golf scene wants anything to do with them.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll soften, and maybe the courts will have something to say about it, because clearly, you know, there's going to be a lot of lawyers lined up looking to get LIV Golf accepted into the mainstream and
antitrust.
With this antitrust suit against the PGA Tour. But I'm just having a hard time believing that as much as the Saudi, you know, fund has limitless resources, you know, allegedly, no one wants to throw money down a hole forever. And I think 5 or 6 years from now, if they're not legitimized, and clearly they're not going to be able to get any TV ratings or YouTube views, because that's way too far down the road. I just think it's going to end badly.
Okay. Yeah, Dave, I'm kind of with you on that as well. I think at some point those who are funding all this, even if it's, like, again, as you said, they're not going to get a return on their investment with everything they've put into this, but I think at some point they might just get bored. And 5, 6, 7 years from now, it's like, okay, what do we want to do next? So, yeah.
And if you're not making progress, you're not achieving that goal of kind of legitimizing your regime, because
you're
laughing stock.
You're eroding the PGA Tour, which would be part of the goal, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's part of it. That's definitely part of the plan. Yeah.
So, okay. Anyways, moving on. Yes guy, no guy. The Las Vegas Golden Knights are a bottom five team in the NHL this coming season.
Oh, boy. I'm going to say no guy. I don't know how they're not going to be, but I'm going to say no guy. I just think somehow they're going to pull it out somehow. I don't know how, but does that make any sense?
Look, I mean, I guess it would be. I'm going to say no guy, too, because it is dangerous to bet against a franchise that was, you know, thought to be a bottom feeder when it came out in its first inaugural season and made it all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So the guys that run that team have found ways to make what looks like proverbial chicken bleep look like chicken salad. I think they'll do it again.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going with a yes guy. They have the benefit of playing in the West, which is extremely weak. Like, you don't know what you're getting with San Jose, the Kings, Ducks. But I just, like, they don't have a goaltender. Laurent Brossoit, like, that's pretty much their starter now with Robin Lehner out. So I don't know how they're, you know, I'm pretty sure the top goalie available for them right now would be Braden Holtby, which is no way to, you know, finish in any way towards the top of the standing. So
you're living in Toronto here, man. You talk about bad goaltending goaltending.
No, hey, listen, that's a separate conversation. As much as I'm not happy with the Matt Murray, Ilya Samsonov combination, I'll take those two over Brayden Holtby every day of the week.
Well, let's just end it at, there's a lot of hockey players that still have to be signed, and there's plenty of time to do it, and we'll hit the top of the hour and say Overdrive continues on TSN 2 and 1050.